You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
'Twas the fright before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring. Except for us watching some really weird movies.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, not even a undead serial killer cop.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, horror for the casually obsessed. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
And this week, we are celebrating Christmas the only way we know how, with some fucking freaky movies. We are talking about Maniac Cop 2. John has been trying to get this one on the podcast forever. John, how are you feeling right now?
I'm feeling good. Real big Maniac Cop fan. Even bigger Maniac Cop 2 fan. I fa-la-la-la love this movie.
You know, I'm going to give you this one. I'm going to put it here in wax just for you.
Uh-huh.
I was wrong about this movie.
Yes.
I prejudged it. I'm still going to stand firm in the fact that I do not think it's a film for me.
Oh.
But I enjoyed it immensely. This is not my type of movie at all, but I will watch this every Christmas with you.
It is so fucking fun. And that's the thing. I thought you were going to say that.
The same way Die Hard is not my type of movie, but boy, do I fucking love it.
You say that. Every single time I show you an action movie, you're like, oh my God, I think I love action movies. But Rambo?
Don't...
Rambo 2? Somehow better than Rambo 1? Two completely different movies.
These are my secrets.
Kim is a way bigger action fan than she wants to let on.
She just knew.
She just gets very stressed out when people get lit on fire.
I hate a full body burn,
People get lit on fire in this movie. I thought you were going to tip your hat to me as this being a Christmas movie. I thought you were really skeptical of that.
Oh, I have more hats to tip.
Okay. Because, this doesn't feature a serial killer that gets dressed up like Santa, but it is very much a Christmas movie.
Yes, one of my favorite things about this movie is that you will probably maybe not find this on a list of Christmas horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
Unless you're looking way down at the bottom, like number 17. But if you're looking for Christmas vibes and you're sick of watching the same three Christmas horror movies over and over and over again, this will give you that jingle jolly feeling and also that holy fuck, what am I watching feeling.
Yeah, I think you and I end up butting heads with other people about Christmas movies because for us, I think we're way more interested in, especially horror movie that is just set around Christmas but is not Christmas specific.
I mean, I will take a Christmas Evil any day.
Oh, sure.
But I love a movie with that acknowledges Christmas is a time of the year.
Yeah. We're also the only people that are watching Goodfellas as a Christmas movie just because there's a couple scenes where some gangsters hang out around a Christmas tree.
Love it.
That's all I need. I just need a scene where somebody's putting a fucking ornament up and complaining about something. I'm like, oh, Christmas movie.
And goes to visit the ma.
Yes. And perfect example of that, Maniac, William Lustig's first movie. Technically a Christmas movie, but you don't necessarily see it.
Is Maniac a Christmas movie too?
Maniac is a Christmas movie, 100%. There's even a scene where people are carrying Christmas trees.
So why did he choose two?
See his ma at the graveyard.
Why did we choose two?
Oh, no, I mean Maniac.
Oh,
the
Maniac,
movie Maniac.
Not Maniac Cop.
Maniac Cop 1 is a St. Patrick's Day movie, and I'm going to seal the deal here on you right now for maybe possibly doing a Maniac Cop Marathon. Maniac Cop 3, Valentine's Day movie.
Oh, so maybe 2023 is Maniac Cop year?
We'll see. I don't know if you're going to be nuts about that one. But
oh, no.
Definitely not the best of the franchise, but holy shit, is it fun.
Okay, John, for anybody that has not seen Maniac Cop 2, let's do a three good things to either convince them to watch it or to give them a taste of what we're going to be talking about.
Sure. I think we've said a few of them already. Like, this has kind of already
Christmas!
Been a good sampling of good things about Maniac Cop 2. But number one has to be, like, a full body burns. A+ full body burns.
That's one stressful.
Some of the longest full body burns you will see in a horror movie. Like, the whole finale, the villain is on fire,
One
guys.
Anxiety thing.
So good. Number two, hands down, one of the best car chases you will ever see on film, period. And culminates with a, how many car chase sequences have you seen that also involve a chainsaw? Or a car that has no tires? Or a person who gets handcuffed to a steering wheel from the outside of the car in that car chase? This car chase has it all. Number three.
You gotta do Christmas.
Okay, fine. Number three is Christmas. The maniac cop is the ghost of Christmas past come for revenge.
Ooh.
Several years later.
I love that. And yeah, and people are getting in the spirit. Like, we're at the cop precinct and they're hanging up, you know, tinsel garlands and getting in the jolly old feeling.
Right.
Before they all get murdered violently.
And those are only three good things about Maniac Cop 2. There are 100 more, and I'm very excited to finally get into it with you. I have been wanting to do this movie on the podcast, not actually for that long. This was a movie I discovered during the 1,000 movie quarantine binge we all did in 2020, so it's a recent favorite for me, but I think I've seen it 6 times in the last 2 years.
You have forcibly tried to make me watch this several times, and I have been like, nah. But there are a few scenes I remember because you physically were like, Kim, you must watch at least this moment.
Yeah, these 10 seconds right here matter. This will change your life.
And I'm sold. I am sold.
Yeah, Maniac Cop 2 for me it's in that pantheon of sequels that are better than the original, like Evil Dead 2, maybe possibly Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
This is too early for fighting words, John.
But we're here. We did it. And Christmas is the time of year to talk about this movie. I'm very excited to be here with you right now. And before we get into it, here's the direct-to-video trailer for Maniac Cop 2.
You have the right to remain silent.
He's still alive.
Forever. Again.
You can't kill the dead.
Why is this been kept from the public and the press?
When this leaks out, people are not going to want to pick up the phone and dial 911. We're looking at a bloodbath here. Let us out to serious trouble.
I touched his hand, and I was back there again, with the dead.
What's he want?
I don't know.
What'd you see?
Sean, I saw Matt Cordell.
He had a reason for coming here. He's got a reason for everything he does.
Did you ever see anything so nasty?
Cordell's gonna pay you a visit and you'll see him.
It must be visiting hours, cause my friend is back!
We're getting stronger, cause we got ourselves a leader.
Well, the cops in the world can't stop Cordell.
You murdered him! You're pushing me too far!
Maniac Cop 2. You'll be screaming blue murder.
This was direct to video?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Man, I'm telling you, the early 90s, direct to video was where it was at.
Do you know this? Do you know the budget of this film? How did this occur? How did they get these car chase scenes, a full body burn, and people falling out of every single glass surface available to them without a theatrical budget?
So that in particular was, I think, early pre-sales to Japanese distributors, which is kind of what ended up fucking Maniac Cop 3 over, because that sale fell through. They lost a whole shit ton of their budget. They tried to change some things around. It didn't necessarily work. We'll save that for another episode. But a lot of this was basically built on distribution deals pre-sold before going into the movie.
Huh.
It's also why you don't see as many independent movies nowadays, because DVD sales aren't what they were, and like, you used to get a movie that would not do very good at the box office but would, you know, sell a shit ton of copies because it was a bit of a cult hit once it finally hit Blockbuster or something, which is money that the studios could use to fund other weirder projects, but that just doesn't happen anymore, so you don't see those movies at all.
Mm.
I know, it's just like, it's just that the landscape is changing. Like, it's a big deal. There are still great movies being made everywhere. It's just
I do very much miss the mid-budget movie.
Right? And Maniac Cop 2, at least according to Google, had a $4 million budget. I have no idea how much it made back. I don't even think you could make this movie nowadays shot for shot for $4 million.
No.
Like, sure, you're definitely not shooting on New York City streets.
The safety costs alone.
Yeah, that's, man, I said at the beginning of this movie that this is a stunt person's dream project, and you could not have disagreed with me more. You really think that this is the kind of movie that stunt workers look at and go, oh God, I can't, I shouldn't go into work today?
Maybe for the fun car stuff, but you said that right before a scene where somebody falls out a two-story window, lands on a car, hits the ground, and then is not a dummy because gets up and then gets shot,
right?
And falls down. It was not a dummy because they were like, no, you have to get up and get shot after, so you need to really fall out this
to
window.
Show that it's a real person doing it. Man, they just don't make movies like this anymore.
Because people get injured.
I'll tell you right now that the hood of that car was probably not the real hood of a car. Like, it was probably something softer, and then fully work added after the fact, sold it to your brain as being a real car that somebody might have got hurt jumping out of a window.
Even if it was that fucking trampoline material that wrestling mats are made of to make more sound and look like they hurt, but they don't actually.
Yeah.
Two stories would still significantly hurt you.
This is a great resume project for a stunt person.
I agree.
Are you kidding
me? I agree. It's just very, very stressful.
You gotta get that out of your head.
I worry about the human beings.
Don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, hey, I have not come across an article saying that, you know, a bunch of people got injured on the set of Maniac Cop 2. By all accounts, was like one of the best sets that William Lustig has ever had. Everybody was having a blast, and you fucking see it. This movie is firing on all cylinders.
It is.
Right? And it's just out of the gate, takes off screaming.
Okay, before we get too much into it, I have not seen Maniac Cop 1.
Okay. I've definitely... These are always my favorite spots, because I've definitely watched it in the room with you beside me.
I haven't paid attention to Maniac Cop 1. Can you just take me to the start of the movie?
Yeah, sure. There is a cop, or there is a serial killer going around
who's
town.
A maniac.
So there's just a person dressed as a cop who's going around killing a whole bunch of people around town.
Mm-hmm.
Vindictive style killings. They seem very targeted. He's got a crazy mutilated face. That's all anybody ever sees of him. And it turns out to be a police officer who was framed for...
Do we know that he was framed?
I mean, at the time, we don't know that. We just know it's a police officer who... it was a crooked cop who went to jail and got killed in prison.
Okay.
We find out later that he was actually a great cop. He was a stellar police officer who was trying to expose corruption in his own precinct, mm-hmm. who then got framed.
And we learned that in the first film?
We learned that in the first
film. Okay, because they do very light coverage of it in the second film, and it seems very important.
Who fucking cares by the time you get to the second one? Like, we've got a guy who dies at the end of the first movie. You see a nice little recap of it at the beginning of this one, because there's some great special effects. Man, you got stunt guys driving full-ass police vans off a pier and then jumping away from the car as the van, rolls the opposite direction. It's incredible. It stresses you out. We can't even talk. You can't even have fun talking about it.
I just...
These people are professionals, Kim. They have trained their entire lives with their brothers in their backyards to do these stunts.
I would just like it to look a little bit like a dummy.
No, none of that. Absolutely not. This is practical filmmaking in the sense that these are real people doing these very real dangerous things. And so Maniac Cop 2 picks up where Maniac left off. Reports are going around the town that the Maniac Cop, Matt Cordell, is dead, but his body was never recovered from the scene.
Of course.
Bruce Campbell and his girlfriend, that's a whole B-plot from the first
movie. Oh, they were dating?
They were having an affair.
Oh.
Bruce Campbell was married and was having an affair with this other police officer. He's now a celebrated police officer around town for taking down the maniac serial killer cop. But he can't even read the newspaper celebrating his own work because he dies at the newspaper stand.
Okay, let's talk about this scene because I you know, I jumped on board with this film. I was really just, you know, going through the motions, trying to figure out where we were in the story, because I'm coming into a second, into a sequel and not really too familiar with the first film. So I assumed our leads were going to be Bruce Campbell and his partner.
Yeah, Officer Teresa.
This film does away with a lot of characters that you think you're going to be following very brutally and very suddenly.
Hell yeah.
And it is jarring in the best ways. The scene where Bruce Campbell gets murdered at the newspaper is fucking fantastic.
You liked it, eh?
I was so surprised.
Yeah, which is great because you expect, yeah, you do, like a guy like Bruce Campbell, you expect to be in the whole movie. And I think that's why it works so well. Because you're also, I don't know, 15 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
It's not just the cold open, like Friday the 13th part 2.
Like, oh, let's get rid of fucking Annie or whatever.
Yeah. No, it's not like that at all. Like, you actually get some time with this guy before he gets killed. And I think it mostly came down to money. Like, I just don't think they could afford Bruce Campbell at the time. So he kind of got written out of it. Tom Atkins was also in the first movie. He's replaced by the Lieutenant McKinney character, like the gruff cop, the gruff New York cop, the standard boilerplate gruff New York City cop. Fedora.
I mean, he looks great though.
He looks so fucking
cool. He's lit so well.
I'd listen to him complain all day.
Going back to that newspaper scene, it's tenfold when Susan Riley, who becomes our lead.
She's the cop psychiatrist.
She's the shrink of the police officers. And then anybody who's, you know, saying that the maniac cop is still alive has to pay a visit to her.
Yeah.
And she starts to get suspicious that maybe there's something to this rumor. And she goes to speak with the newspaper stand guy. And he is a minor character.
Mm-hmm.
He is gets 5 minutes of screen time.
Yeah.
He shows up and then never shows up again. And the fucking story they give him,
it's amazing,
holy
right?
Holy moly. I was just flabbergasted. I was like, look at the quality of writing in this sequel. And to learn it's direct-to-video, just, oh,
it's nuts, right?
Wonderful. So he is a veteran. And
yeah, he's blind.
He's blind. And he starts to tell her how he was blinded.
Isn't it kind of weird at first when he starts telling the story? You're like, where are we going with this?
You're like, okay, old man. So he was a survivor of like shrapnel. There was an explosion in his platoon and he was the only one that survived. And he survived because he was insulated by the bodies of all of his fellow soldiers.
Yeah, like at night they would freeze because the temperature dropped too low. And the only reason he didn't die out there of the cold is because they were keeping him warm like a really gross blanket.
Yeah, and I think he said he was there for a full day just like, you know, close to death, surrounded by the corpses of his friends and comrades. Mm-hmm. And she asks him if he touched the maniac cop or the assailant. And the reason why he's been telling the story is because that was the only time he ever touched death. And it was the most similar, like the most eerily similar feeling. Yeah. And I was just like, dear God, this movie is wonderful.
Right? Yeah, it was like crazy cold and haunting and just like it ran through him immediately and that's where he got brought back.
Oh, that's writing that just gets into your bones. Well, and you're just like, oh, that's good writing.
It's great writing and it's also just a great delivery from Robert Earl Jones, James Earl Jones's dad.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's who he's also in Sleepaway Camp. I don't know if you remember. He's got like a real silly, goofy character.
He's not one
in that
of the sleazeballs in it, right?
He's one of the adults who looks past the sleazeball like, oh, those kids don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, God.
Like, he very clearly knows that there's a pedophile at work, but doesn't say anything about it. Yeah, he's incredible in this movie.
So good. So good.
And he's in it for a minute and a half.
Oh.
Scene stealer.
Honestly, the movie just tops itself because I was like, surely nothing will be better than this scene.
Every scene in this movie is better than the previous scene.
Oh my God.
Even the opening scene where the maniac cop shows up to stop a bodega robbery. And then, you know, sort of like, oh, I'm doing a switcheroo on you guys. I kill the victim here and I let the bad guy go. But just him showing
up. Reverse cop.
Reverse cop, yeah, that's how you were referring to him in the while we were watching this. And when the thief shoots at the cop, because he's got the silhouette of just like a big burly cop, the bullets obviously pass through him, break away the glass for the refrigerator, and then the mist from the freezer just like pours out.
Oh, you
into
fucking
the
love
fucking,
that fucking
yeah,
fog.
It's incredible.
The lighting and just the shadowing effects on the maniac cop in this film are just simply fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of like neon glow, which is great because it's New York, but also because it's Christmas time and you have red just like filtering through the entire image, and it's highlighting like the sharp light on the sides of their faces, and you can't quite see the maniac cop. Even the detective gets that sharp lighting, and so there's like such a harsh highlight. It looks so wonderful.
Oh yeah. And then later in the movie too, when he makes best friends with a serial killer in town.
Oh, just, who has the moodiest apartment.
Right? They're just hanging out in his tiny little, like, I don't know, 30 square foot apartment in the boiler room of a subway station.
It like looks like it's under a bridge but has a door.
Yes. It's harsh red lighting. It's like floodlights that are just situated on the floor, so everybody's got like this weird, ominous fucking film noir style shadow across them. Amazing.
It's so good. And it makes the makeup just look so much more threatening.
Oh yeah. He's full undead in this movie too, right?
I love it.
In the first one, he's believed to be dead, but is turned out survived the attack. His death was faked. So he's very much a living person.
Oh.
Yeah. Who is out for revenge, and now he's fully undead, back from the grave.
Yeah,
from
like
a watery grave.
I like Dead Cop.
Yeah, he looks awesome. His face is also quite ghoulish compared to the first movie. Like in the first movie, he's just got like a lot of rad, gnarly scars. In this, death has very quickly taken over. He really, really does look like a corpse with a cool pointy nose and like a jack-o'-lantern style mouth.
He goes from Friday the 13th part 2 to Friday the 13th part 7.
Oh, yeah, in a weekend. It's great. And I think part of that might be because by the end of the movie, when he's lumbering around on fire, like he's obviously covered in flame retardant bandages, so he has to look
bulky.
He has to look bulky for the fire, so I think they sort of just reverse engineered the look from that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The silhouette, too, of just that octagonal police hat just looks so great when he's walking to and from crime scenes.
Love it.
One of my favorite fucking crime scenes is such a throwaway moment, but some guy is getting towed by a police officer on a New York side street.
Yeah.
Maniac cop shows up, kills the police officer, but he hangs him on the tow and drives off.
Right. I love, too, that the guy who's getting his car impounded just rips up the ticket, drives away. But then later the cops pin the murder on him, too, right? So good. Man, I just love...
Reverse cop.
I love the grimy New York City streets. And
you
like,
love a New York street.
Oh, yeah. And like this is a 1990s movie, so like New York's starting to clean itself up a little bit already. But William Lustig, who's lived in New York his entire life, is like, we're only going to the bad parts. There's going to be newspapers strewn across the city streets. Steam's coming out of every sewer grate. There's a scene where there's no steam and they just have a fucking like fog machine. There's like, fuck it. Like,
yeah, but you have a paranormal entity. You can have fog wherever you want.
Right? You can get away with murder.
It's also Christmas time, the season of ghosts.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I love it. The British invented the ghost story on Christmas Eve. William Lustig perfected it in Maniac Cop 2.
Okay. let's not go too far.
Well, yeah, that's my job with a movie like Maniac Cop 2. I love everything about it. It's a gold star movie for me. It can do no wrong, even if its silliest moments are fucking inspired. It is a B-movie masterpiece.
It feels surprisingly unsilly, though.
Yes.
Even when the maniac cop befriends the serial killer and they're going through town like silent buddies, it's still so dark and sharp. And I think a lot of that comes to the fact that our lead character is an educated woman, Susan Riley.
She's the Scully of the group.
She is the Scully of the group, and she takes this very seriously, and she sees some pretty fantastical things that you think would question your understanding of, you know, what you believe to be true. She sees somebody, the maniac cop being shot at point blank range.
Oh, yeah.
Several times in the gut and then not flinching.
Yeah, grabs a fucking chainsaw with his bare hands, just like stops a chainsaw before breaking a girl's neck. Isn't that fucking car chase incredible?
It is so good.
Yeah.
So, and I can honestly not tell you which half of it I enjoy more. Whether it's the two women driving away from the maniac cop in a cab on the rims of a tire that's been exploded.
And it's sparks going everywhere.
So Christmassy.
They're driving down the sidewalk, just like running into like piles and piles and piles of garbage.
Oh, the fucking sparks though. It was a shower of wonderful holiday feelings.
It goes on forever too. It's not just like a quick little, oh wow, that 30 second bit was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's, and it's not 5 just minutes like long. Tight close-up shots where you're like, yeah, you guys are really doing this. Like, we get full wide shots of the two cars, like, rubbing and battling it out with sparks everywhere.
Yeah, and then the second part of that is when they get divided by the maniac cop. Teresa runs off and gets a chainsaw from a home improvement store. Meanwhile, the cop handcuffs Susan to the steering wheel and then just, like, takes the emergency brake off and rolls it down the street.
Oh.
Man, harrowing, right?
And then terrifying.
It goes on forever. And it's a real person strapped to the outside of this car, steering a car down the goddamn hill while into oncoming traffic.
And the whole time you're like, climb in, climb in, climb in, climb in.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know, it's only topped by Maniac Cop 3's car chase sequence, a movie we're not talking about here today, but I will say Maniac Cop gets set on fire, but that does not stop him. He chases after people on fire in a police car with no door on. It's incredible. Like,
wow.
100%, like, not the greatest movie of the franchise, but if you want to see Maniac Cop come back to life from, you know, hoodoo voodoo, and then also get into a dope car chase while on fire, that's the movie to watch.
Wow. It's got to be good, though, to top that scene, because my mouth was on the floor.
Yeah. Do you like that car chase scene more than Body Parts? What's your favorite?
Oh, man.
That Body Parts car chase is pretty wild.
Yeah. Oh, having not seen Body Parts in at least, like, a year or so, I'm going to have to say they're tied.
Okay. I can accept that.
Yeah. They're fucking good, though.
Yeah. Definitely the two best car chases since...
An unwilling car... Like, a car chase that ends with an unwilling participant driving a car. Like, it's just insane.
Yeah. I love it so much. And you're right. It is weird how much it's not silly. It's very fun. It's not silly. But it is a blast, the whole movie. And it's got, you know, it's got its tongue in its cheek. It's got a grin on the whole time, but it's not trying to be like the Three Stooges or anything.
Yeah, there's so much silliness with the serial killer. Like, he brings so much levity to the story.
A weird thing to say, right?
I know, because he's so silly. And
the funny thing is that scene where he breaks into that girl's apartment and starts strangling her is genuinely scary.
No, it's terrifying. And even when he stalks her, it's terrifying because
you're
aware of who he is and she's not. And it's just a really uncomfortable sequence. And also, we're so taken from the story that we've been following thus far that you're like, why are we here? What's happening? Why are we following this?
And like, there has been some talk in the background about a serial killer that's been targeting women. And you think that's just like, oh yeah, just like standard news story. But like, we go into that and we follow him. So she calls the cops before he breaks into her apartment. And she says, I've already called the police. He goes, that's no big deal. This won't take long. You're like, oh, fuck. But then to have the maniac cop who just can sniff crime and he's got a sixth sense for it, breaks into the apartment, rips him off of her, and like, let me strangle her. That's kind of funny. Like, that's kind of hilarious. And then obviously the two of them have to escape when the cops show up. And then, yeah.
It's just so many layers of evil in that tiny little hotel room.
It's wild. And of course the stripper relays to the police that his hands were as cold as ice, as cold as death. So that's how we know that they're on the trail of Matt Cordell, and they're finally closing in on him. Do you imagine that serial killer in the movie is the maniac from Maniac?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because at this point, Joe Spinell had died, so Joe Spinell. I have always imagined that Joe Spinell would play that character, and that as much as I hate cinematic universes, for some reason I kind of love the idea of Joe Spinell's maniac and the maniac cop hanging out in the same city at the same time.
I do like that, but I think the casting choice for Maniac Cop 2 is, I think I prefer him over Maniac in this movie, just because he provides a sense of, I don't know, there's something silly about him.
You can say it. He's less sweaty.
Whimsical. And, well, Maniac is really scary.
Yeah.
And this guy is, like, less, I don't know. It's hard to say because he's still, like, a killer of women. But, I don't know, he's sillier.
It's heightened reality. Like, we are in a bubblegum version of the real world that just also happens to have a lot of horrible murder in it.
Well, and also he instantly becomes like an Igor character. He is his side buddy, yeah. and he becomes, you know, the pinky to his to Maniac Cop's brain.
I love that.
I don't know if he was Maniac, it would be the exact same.
No, it absolutely wouldn't. I just, you know, it seems like a what-if scenario.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, both movies directed by William Lustig. It's basically returning to a character he's already done. It is a cartoonish version of that, but it totally works for this. I'm still going to pretend that it's the same person. It's just different casting, and, like, he's gotten a little kookier over time.
It is nice, too, though, that a film that's talking on, like, police corruption and all that stuff and, like, kind of like the New York streets, while we are following, like, a paranormal supernatural story, there's also just a serial killer walking around, a very real serial killer who's murdering people. So, like, if you take Maniac Cop out of Maniac Cop 2, there's still a story here.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like, there's still a movie here that I would watch. It's more Silence of the Lambsy, but...
Yeah, and the cops are definitely not ever sort of let off on how awful they are. Just like, wow, you guys kind of suck at your job, like, across the board, all the time. And that's also true about just about the era. Like, any filmmaker who lived in New York, who was making movies in New York, who was stealing shots in New York, was criticizing the cops a lot. Fun part about that, though. You know, if you're curious about how William Lustig's able to get away with just closing off city streets in New York and having the craziest car chases you've ever fucking seen, it's because he hired off-duty cops to do a bunch of, to basically be security for the movie. That's how they basically got away with murder in a bunch of these scenes where they did shit that they shouldn't be doing. It's because he just paid off-duty cops to show up in uniform and say, like, yeah, go for it. Like, that's how this movie gets made.
I love that. That's wonderful. And as much as the film does kind of talk about corruption and stuff, I really enjoy Lieutenant McKinney's character, because he kind of waxes poetic on like the whole movie, but like, we're all Maniac Cops.
Right, the only difference between, like, what is it, the line between a cop and a Maniac Cop is as thin as a trigger on a gun.
it's a little silly, but
I love it.
But I do really love it, because it really goes to show that it's two sides of the same coin, a police officer and a criminal. Like, all of those human instincts and those urges are there in everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone has a little bit of maniac in them.
Yeah, it comes from a desire of justice. And at some point, you tip over and you become, like, the judge, jury, executioner, where you think you're above the law.
Well, yeah, and his example is that he keeps arresting this one guy who keeps getting on the road, and he says, before I can even file the... Or he keeps getting let out before I can even file the paperwork.
Right? Crazy. But some of the best sequences of this movie, one of my favorite sequences, I mean, like, fuck, every sequence of this movie is just like we said before, better than the last. I love when the maniac cop goes into the police precinct to break out his serial killer buddy, Steven. It is so fucking great. He just, like, lays waste to a shit ton of cops at a shooting range. And then just to see him, like, fucking fade in from the shadows, walking through the targets. It's amazing. Like, and it's just a guy walking out from a dark spot into the light. It shouldn't look that great. It's amazing.
It's so good.
And then when he just, like, kicks down the door before coming into the holding cells, and the camera just starts spinning sideways as it's pulling in into the door. Amazing!
And then he dispatches the whole precinct, and you get another shot of the Christmas decorations, and I love it.
Yo, he just starts walking through glass walls. He's just like, fuck it, the fastest way, I'm not walking around this. It's not my office. The blam!
The fucking glass budget on this movie.
So much glass. He grabs a guy by his lapel and just tosses him across the room and 30 feet into the air, and he breaks every beam across the way.
That gave me total Malignant vibes.
I knew you were gonna say that. I fucking knew it.
I was like, ooh, future pairing.
What good company. That's a double bill I'd watch for sure.
The only thing I'm not on board with is at this moment when he kidnaps Susan and brings her on their weird hijinks back to Sing Sing, where they're gonna go, I think he's just going to get revenge there, right?
Yep, he's going back to kill the people that attacked him in the shower.
But, like, for somebody who's been instantly killing cops this whole movie, and Susan has put on a cop uniform, even though she's not, like, a field officer, she probably should have died in that moment.
The connective tissue that gets us to the prison, like, I'm not...
Maybe it's because she's a good cop, and but the thing is,
she's helping. It's like The Ring, you know what I'm saying? Like she's helping get the story of Matt Corral.
She's the VHS tape recording the story.
She's Naomi Watts telling the world what happened.
Yeah, the VHS tape.
Okay, because Matt Corral at this point is still considered a like in the regular world, he's considered a crooked cop who was killed in prison because that's what happens to crooked cops
right,
in prison.
Right, but up until this point, he's been killing anybody who's good and rescuing, saving, releasing anybody who's bad, even if it's petty criminals.
Yes.
So he kidnaps her and then they're all on a prison bus driving to Sing Sing, and one of the guys they take along is like creepy on her and he's like, no, 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 no.
You stay
and
away
from like, good maniac cop?
And that creeper is Clarence Williams III. Man, I know too much about this movie and just like the people who are in it, but it's just littered with like fun, interesting character actors. Like Clarence Williams III, you'll recognize as Mr. Sims from Tales from the Hood. He's also the bad guy in Half Baked.
He's really good when they're all in the holding cell.
Yes, because he can't go back to Sing Sing because they're gonna kill him there. Like he's made a lot of enemies at Sing Sing, and we're specifically going to like Death Row at Sing Sing, and that's where the maniac cop gets a fucking Molotov cocktail thrown at him, and then he's just on fire for the next 18 minutes.
It's so long, John. It's so long.
He's grabbing people and throwing them up to like the top of the jail cell, like 30 feet in the air, and they catch on fire
yeah,
on
like,
the way up, and then the
lighting.
Person. He catches on fire. Footprints are fire.
He's a menorah, and it is day 7 of Hanukkah. He is a candle, and he lights everybody else up in the room. It's a full body burn that spreads to other people.
Oh man, just the image of him, just and like people cowering from him, trying to hide, and then he just corners them in a prison cell, and just him reaching in the prison cell to the camera to
grab
him.
That was a great moment.
It's amazing. Yeah, that's. I mean, I was already in love with this movie, but by the time we got to that, I was just like, this is the Citizen Kane of New York cinema.
It's weird, too, how much a full body burn feels Christmassy. Maybe, and it's,
right?
It's like all of the violence in the film has Christmassy vibes to it, like the sparks on the bottom of the taxi, the cop being hung on the back of the tow truck.
Oh, sure.
The full body burn. Like, it just feels like, you know, like an ornament hanging, the top of the Christmas tree, Christmas lights.
Hell
like,
yeah. All we needed was somebody to be chopped up and put into a box and delivered somewhere, right? That's all we needed.
Oh, God. But surprisingly Christmassy, even in its un-Christmassy moments.
Yeah, and all he wanted was to get his name cleared. He was going to kill a lot of people to do it, but he finally got...
I mean, that wasn't all he wanted, because he walked into stores that were actively being robbed and aided them along. He's not completely innocent in this, which is crazy, because he gets a hero's funeral at the end of this movie.
He does finally get the hero's funeral. Well, they're not burying the maniac cop, they're burying Matt Corral. They're like, no, the last like year, everything else he did, that didn't happen. That was a entity. That wasn't the man that we are burying today.
Like, he aided and abetted a serial killer who was killing women in New York City.
I mean, hey, it's I guess he's doing nothing that the New York criminal system isn't already doing. It's basically putting guns back into the criminal's hands and then also sweeping its dirty secrets under the rug.
Yeah. But he was doing it out of revenge.
Yes. It's all justice. Yeah. Man, I love this fucking movie. It is perfect to me. It's a little shaggy. It's a little rough around the edges. It doesn't fully make sense in some parts, but I do not care. I love every character. I love every set piece. The cinematography in it's amazing. It's shot so fucking well. I have not seen every single William Lustig movie, but I think this is the best movie he's ever made. Given the two movies of his that I haven't seen, I'm confident in saying that. I don't think Uncle Sam is going to top this, and every single year I tell myself I'm going to watch that movie. I still haven't crossed it off the watch list, but next Independence Day, for sure.
He really likes holidays.
Right? I think he's just a smart
guy. Was he just
guy.
Trying to get every holiday in?
You'd think so.
Does he have a Halloween movie?
I don't think he has a Halloween movie, but Larry Cohn is also the producer of this movie, who wrote the movie as well. And I think that the pairing of the two of those guys together is really the secret sauce that makes this movie work.
I mean, they really understand New York.
They understand New York. They also understand how to produce and market a movie for themselves. Like, they don't like they know what's going to sell. They know what they need to try and sell it just to hook somebody to get a fucking butt in the seat. And like, that's just exploitation filmmaking. That's independent filmmaking. Like, if you're the person who's writing and producing and directing it and also taking it to market and also trying to advertise the movie.
I mean, modern day people that would be doing that is Lloyd Kaufman from Trauma and Rob Zombie.
I mean, yeah. And they
Kevin
Lloyd,
Smith.
Lloyd Kaufman definitely doing it all at the exact same time. Really, any indie filmmaker today is already doing all of that. But, you know, back in the 80s, that wasn't a skill everybody needed to have. And some of them just inherently had it. Like William Castle.
The Hustle, yeah.
Yeah, like just like their fucking circus ringleaders.
Even Alfred
of
Hitchcock.
Filmmakers. Absolutely. Right? It's all in the grand spirit of marketing your movie and getting as many people
and
to
the
see
showmanship.
It. Yeah.
Making a movie more than just a movie is always just this wonderful, magical thing that it stands the test of time.
It's amazing. Yeah, I think... I cannot say enough good about Maniac Cop 2. I'm glad we're here. I'm glad we finally talked about it. And I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's the big thing. Because I was like, something's wrong. Like, Kim doesn't like this. I don't understand. This seems like a kind of movie that she'd really respond to. Like, I know it's not 100% her bag, but she should at least be able to tell me that objectively it's a good movie. I don't know.
I prejudged it, John. And,
that's it.
You know, I'm very sorry. I hope that me watching this with you now every holiday going forward will be enough of an apology.
It's all I've ever wanted, an apology. Yeah, no, I'm happy that this is going back in the regular rotation for sure. I have watched this movie almost every season of the last 2 years, so I'm happy to finally have a nice solid spot for it on the calendar.
Yeah, and I love a Christmas movie that's not too Christmassy. Like,
yeah.
Something that I can watch in the end of November, something that I can watch in between, you know, like Christmas Vacation and like those like sickly sweet Christmas movies. Like, sometimes you want something that's, you know, a little different.
So what's your rating?
I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 4.
I am very unsurprisingly giving it a 4 out of 4. This is a perfect B movie.
No, it's so good. And it looks good. And the story is great. And the writing is just fantastic. The only thing that I don't agree with is Susan making it all the way to the end.
You think she should have died?
Just based on the MO of the Maniac Cop. I love her as a character. I think she's wonderful.
Well, I'm excited to see you watch Maniac Cop try and find love in Maniac Cop 3, Badge of Silence.
Find love?
I told you, it's a Valentine's Day movie. Next week, we're going to be talking about a movie that is very explicitly a Christmas horror movie. It is super goofy and fun. And another, I think, first time watch for Kim.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think she's going to really dig this one. On part two of The Fright Before Christmas, we will be talking about the Spanish-Italian cult classic, The Day of the Beast.
Is this about werewolves? I hope it's about werewolves.
No, this is about Satan trying to bring the Antichrist back to Earth on Christmas Eve.
Well, that's fitting.
Yeah, you're gonna love it. There's a really kooky priest in it that I think you're really gonna love. There's a you know, like a sort of Chris Angel TV personality.
Oh, I love that.
And a goat.
Gotta have a goat.
Gotta have a goat.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Nightmare on Film Street. Let us know your thoughts on Maniac Cop 2 by tweeting at us at NOFS Podcast, or you can find us in our Discord. It's full of cool fiends like yourself at nofspodcast.com/discord. And if you're a fan of the show, consider giving us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this, and joining our Patreon for a few bucks a month at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Nightmare on Film Street is a labor of love and terror. Kim and I don't have a team behind us for the podcast. It really is just the two of us doing absolutely everything. And if you would like more Nightmare on Film Street, you can find it in the Fiend Club at nofspodcast.com/fiendclub.
Until next time, I'm Kim.
I'm John.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.